So moments of crisis, like the D-Day invasion, cause us to think about what's it all mean? What's the meaning of our lives? I have been fortunate that I have avoided being in a war all my life and haven't had that crisis to deal with. But occasionally things happen to all of us and to me that puts the question of, well, what's it all about in focus? A few years ago, I was in Los Angeles at the Los Angeles airport, and it was early evening. I was taking a flight from Los Angeles up to San Francisco. Of all the ways to get there, it turned out to be the least expensive except for hitchhiking, which I decided not to do that night. I got on the airplane in the evening, and I must say I like to fly. I find it just an amazing experience that we can get these huge machines up in the air and that they float on the air. It's so remarkable, and I always find it kind of a miracle of American engineering. Boeing Company in Seattle, they've done such a good job. And I look out the window, and I like to look down, and I try to imagine, based on maps that I have in my head, where I am and what I can see. It's really quite an exciting experience for me. Even though I've flown many times, the novelty is not worn off. So that evening, Los Angeles Airport, the planes take off and head immediately out to the Pacific Ocean in order to not make too much noise over people's homes. And we took off on time. It was a wide-body jet, seated probably 200, 250 people, I'm not sure, but one of those planes where you have two rows with seats in the middle. But it was almost empty. Apparently, they were moving it from Los Angeles up to San Francisco for some future project. And there were only probably 70 or 80 of us on board. I was sitting in the back on the right side, and there was no one else except one woman was sitting in front of me in the seat directly in front of me, but nobody else on that side in the back. So we're taking off, and very quickly the beautiful lights of Los Angeles disappear, and you see the darkness of the Pacific Ocean, and we're rising into the sky, and suddenly there's this huge bright flame that comes out of the right engine. Now, there's only two engines on this airplane. It's just like an explosion of fire coming out the back. And the woman sitting in front of me and I are the only one who see it because we're in the back on that side of the plane and no one else is. And she starts to scream. Oh, my God! Oh, my God! The engine's on fire! We're going to die. We're going to crash. And the 80 roughly people on the airplane heard her and looked around because they hadn't seen this. And they saw me and they looked at me to kind of, I wasn't screaming or anything. Is this woman crazy or is there something really going on? And I thought, well, what do I say? the engine is on fire, but I'm sure we'll be all right. Just remain calm. I didn't know what to say. I thought, why tell her to be calm when she might be right? I mean, why get into an argument with somebody as the plane is about to crash? Just let her have her feelings, you know? I'm a minister. I'm trained to let people express their feelings, you know, and she's expressing hers quite dramatically. Maybe a minister should try to calm her down so she's calm at the last moments before we hit the water. And then all this takes place in just a fraction of a second. And then I'm looking at a sign directly in front of me that I generally ignore. And it says, seat cushion will float. So I start to look around at all the empty seats, and I start to think, I could grab all these seat cushions. One for this arm, one for that arm, one for my leg, maybe two or three for my legs, and I could float if necessary. So I'm thinking about how I'm going to grab the seat cushions. The flaming of the engine lasts just for a few seconds, and then it goes out. And then you start to smell smoke inside the cabin. And that's not, you know, then everybody knows something's going on. It's not a normal smell. Somehow, it's a smell of burning fuel oil. And then the flame starts again, and then it goes out again. And then the captain says, comes on and says, in this very calm and reassuring voice, we've had a compressor go out. I have no idea what that means, on our right engine, and so we're going to return to the airport, carefully avoiding words like, we're going to make an emergency landing at the airport. And we turn, and on one engine, we land the plane, and we get out. About 2 hours later, they find another plane for us, and we take off, and we're all safe. But all of this caused me, sitting in the airport, to think about what do I find, what is really important in my life? And I made a list. Now, each of us deals with this awareness, this feeling that we have human limitations in our own way. Sometimes we're reminded of it because of the death of a friend or a relative, or because of an illness that we're struggling with. Sometimes milestones like the 70th anniversary of the invasion of France remind us of the passage of time. One way we cope with this awareness is to turn to religion. We hope that religion will help us come to grips with the meaning of our lives. We hope that religious thinkers might give us insight into how our lives, our work, and our small part of the universe have meaning and significance. Well, as a minister, I can report that many clergy and theologians find this expectation that you all have of us as intimidating. Indeed, we sometimes feel dishonest standing up here in a pulpit or writing books, knowing that we are not nearly as wise as people hope we are. Clergy have studied the history and traditions of religion. We've gained experience in the management of a religious community. We've developed skills in public speaking and religious arts. We've trained in helping others explore their own questions and become comfortable with their own feelings. But we do not have any special knowledge about the meaning of life. We do not know much more than most persons about this topic. Religious leaders struggle as hard as everyone else to try to figure out how to live life fully. But still, I have been thinking about this question since I entered seminary back in 1974 at the age of 23, and I've developed a list of guides that I use in my own life. This morning, I want to share with you a list of the floating seat cushions to which I cling to give my life significance. First, relationships with family members are important. Now, most of us have mixed feelings about our parents, our brothers and sisters, our spouses, and our children. Part of the meaning of my life, part of my task in this universe, is to work on those relationships. So I thought of my family on that airplane as I watched the engine burn. As a husband and parent, this means attending to relationships with my wife and my children. At other times, it means taking a trip to see my sister or my brother or my stepmother. And at still other times, it means writing a letter or making a phone call. and it may mean sharing my home when family comes to visit. Working on my relationships with my family is a lifelong project, but it is part of the significance of my life. Second, relationships with friends are also important. In one survey, researchers asked across sections of persons how many close friends they had, not relatives, but close friends who are not related to you. And the most common answer, the most common response on the survey was zero. That is to say, 25% responded that they have no close friends, 25%. The second most common response was one close friend. Others marked two, three, or four. And no one had more than seven close friends. This was a survey of 1,467 people conducted in 2004, part of the General Social Survey of the National Opinion Research Center at the University of Chicago. Of course, being friends with someone is scary. We can get hurt if we open ourselves to others. If we allow ourselves really to be with them, to let them know who we really are. Yet throughout my life, I have been fortunate in finding a few people with whom I can relax and let down my defenses. And these friendships are part of what gives meaning to my life. So family, friends. Third, for me, learning is important. My impression is that we human beings are here on earth to learn, to add to the general knowledge of humankind. It has something to do with the evolutionary process that got us to this point in human development. We create universities and institutions for research. We put telescopes in outer space. The task of every human being, I think, is to help carry forward the search for knowledge. Participation in the growth of human knowledge, if only in a small way, gives my life meaning. Fourth, nature. Nature is important. There is meaning in the spring flowers and in the summer rain. These are manifestations of the divine. For me, it is a prayer to visit our garden or to sit in Mayaca Forest or to take a walk along the beach. The splendor of nature gives meaning to my life. Fifth, speaking and acting against injustice is important. I believe that hunger and homelessness are wrong. The destruction of the environment is wrong. The death penalty is wrong. Our war in Iraq was a mistake. When I write a letter or send a check or attend a demonstration or work in an election process, I am participating in my life, I'm putting my life out in a meaningful way. When I support and encourage others who work to live out their values, then I am engaged in life in a significant way. Sixth on my list is creative expression. I find value in the wonderful music we had this morning, in singing with you together, value in going to the theater and seeing dramas and plays and reading poetry and novels and in writing myself. I find merit in the wonderful quilts we have on display this morning in the Lexa wing that Jane put together. Gorgeous quilts. Value in painting and in sculpture and in photography. Art expresses the range of human emotions, from laughter to tears. Whatever form it takes, I find that art is a justification of human existence. In art, we can be both observer and participant. At times, we are the audience, and at other times, we are the writer, we are the actor, the painter, the photographer, the singer. Seventh, being present, being fully present in the moment is important. A Buddhist puts it this way. While washing dishes, one should only be washing the dishes. Which means that while washing the dishes, one should be completely aware of the fact that one is washing dishes. At first glance, this might seem a little silly. Why put so much stress on a simple thing? But that's precisely the point. The fact that I am standing there and washing these bowls is a wondrous reality. I am being completely myself, following my breathing, conscious of my presence, and conscious of my thoughts and actions. There is no way I can be tossed around mindlessly like a bottle slapped here and there on the waves. A passage by the Jewish philosopher Martin Buber makes the same point using different words, the Buddhist tradition, the Jewish tradition, but it's the same idea. Buber wrote, "I have given up the religious, which is nothing but the exceptional. I possess nothing but the everyday, out of which I am never taken. I know no fullness, but each mortal hour's fullness of claim and responsibility." Being present in the moment gives meaning to my life. Eighth, for me, a sense of the divine. A sense of the divine is important. Karen Armstrong wrote a wonderful book called A History of God. She writes, "One of the reasons why religion seems irrelevant today is that many of us no longer have the sense that we are surrounded by the unseen." Well, I feel surrounded by and part of an all-encompassing, unseen unity. This unity is larger than me, larger than my family, larger than my nation, larger than the human race. My belief in a unity, a connection with the larger life around me, is an answer to depression and despair. Many people call this unity God. Others might call it the larger cosmic force. The name is not important. My feeling of being connected to something larger than me is important. So, a few years ago, I was on a jet airplane over Los Angeles. A stream of fire rushed out of the right engine of the plane. I could smell smoke in the cabin. The pilot's voice came over the loudspeaker. His voice was reassuring. We just had the compressor on one of our two engines go out just to play it safe. We'll be returning to the Los Angeles airport. The frightened woman in the seat in front of me quieted down. And a few minutes later, I could see the runway and feel the wheels touch the ground. We taxied safely back to the terminal. Small events like the malfunction of an airplane engine can encourage us not to postpone the things we want most out of life. They can encourage us to appreciate life at its fullest and celebrate the many miracles that are all around us. Such events can encourage us to evaluate our priorities and get back to basics. Every moment of life is a sacred moment. If we do not feel this, it is because petty distractions engage us. However, we can break out of our busy days and create meaning in our lives. As I waited for the next flight at the airport, I went outside, took a walk outside, and I found myself looking intensely into the night sky, really seeing it, looking out and seeing it fully. I looked into the sky over the rooftops of the airport, and I felt a thrill that there's this whole universe of beauty, a natural world full of wonders with which I had, in the rush of events, almost lost touch. That evening, something inside me revived and renewed a vital link. It said, "Roger, look up. It is a good universe out there, one that you should cherish and enjoy. There is on this earth a whole, rich, beautiful world, a good world, which exists right alongside all the tensions and the struggles of our lives. It waits for you to honor and to savor it. There will be suffering and troubles as each of us searches for our own meaning. There will be misunderstandings and mistakes. There will be fear and tragedy. However, there will also be moments of love and beauty that will sustain us and make our struggles worthwhile.